Blog Talk Radio.
General Quarters, Security Condition 3.
GQ, Security 3, sir. General Quarters 3, intruder alert. GQ 3, intruder alert.
Come on in and welcome once again, folks, to Madame Perry's Salon. I am delighted to have you here, and I want to first of all say thank you for everyone who's been subscribing and downloading and sharing this with your friends, because the numbers are telling me that you're really enjoying it, which means that I am bringing you the most fabulous people that I have the pleasure to meet. And, of course, I am your host and cruise director, Madame Perry, but you can call me Jennifer Perry. And also, if you want to subscribe, you know, if you're listening live tonight, which is you'll see on Blog Talk Radio, you'll see the hot pink or fuchsia or color rectangle that says follow, and just click on that if you would. Or you can also subscribe on Apple iTunes, Stitcher, Blueberry, Podcast FM, and a few other platforms, wherever you choose to enjoy your podcast when you listen to them. Please do. I certainly do appreciate it, because it helps me to continue to bring you the fantastic guests that we've had lately, have coming up, and have tonight. Now, let me say, first of all, you know, we had Pat Duggins on. He's Edward R. Murray Award-winning news director at the NPR station in Alabama. And he was on a couple of months ago talking about his books on space exploration and trailblazing to Mars, because he's covered every single one in his career, everything that NASA's done. But now that Elon Musk has launched SpaceX, or Falcon Heavy, as it is now, his new project from his company SpaceX, we're going to have Pat back in soon to talk about that, because he had a lot of questions and thoughts about that, space exploration being done by a private group rather than NASA. So we're going to have him in the talk soon. Also coming up in the next few weeks, we've got Travis Sievert, who is a podcaster and author. We also have Bootsy Collins, Demond Wilson, who's an actor who you see a lot. You probably first knew him from Sanford and Son as Lamont, but he's never stopped working. The man continues to act in movies and television today, and he'll be on soon as well as Jennifer Irwin, author of Address the Color of the Sky, which has won 3 awards last week alone, and I am so proud of her and happy to have her back. But tonight, I told you, this is going to be a very, very magical night. You know, you never know from day to day who you're going to meet and how they're going to bring something special and something wondrous into your life. And about a year ago, I talked to a friend of mine, Colin Kelly, whom most of you know, about an open mic poetry event he was having at a coffee shop called 200 Peachtree in downtown Atlanta, which was at the time, the marketing director was my good friend, Susan Vagno. And I hustled all my equipment there to try to do a live feed and heard some fascinating poets. But one of the most impressive people that I heard there is with us and is my special guest tonight. She's been a writer since childhood, and she is an author. She writes about expression, illumination, motivation, awareness, and change. And yet she does so much more. She's a painter, but she also has the ability to help other people, and she enjoys doing this. She helps other people realize their dream. For one thing, she's a seer, and she uses her talents to help coach new and experienced entrepreneurs toward their dream. Her debut book is called Everything But a Smile. So I want you to meet artist and poet, and I'm just going to call her a magical woman because that's how I see her, Candace D. Henry. Candace, welcome to Madame Perry Salon. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me. Such a beautiful welcome.
Well, it's an absolute delight. I don't know if you remember that night at 200 Peachtree. Wasn't that the most beautiful place with the real high ceilings and the marble floors?
It's lovely. And I do remember that night. It was very, very special to me. I don't know if I ever told you, but that was the first time that I read those poems in public. And
it
was a huge deal. Yes, because I'm with what I do, I'm used to being behind the scenes, you know, working for brands or working for, you know, individual clients. So being out front is not what I'm used to. And so, and there's other reasons why why that was the first time. I was just very, very nervous. This book was very heavy for me. And so being able to even just two poems was such a big deal. I think, like, once I left, I was walking down Peace crying, just not out of sadness, but just like a big release, you know?
Yeah, I do, actually, because I think expressing your art and yours does definitely come from the soul and from experience, and I feel like in a lot of ways you're an empath. So if I'm reading you correctly, so I feel like you understand and actually feel the feelings of others, so, and channel that into your poetry or just write it into it. So I can definitely see why it's very, can be very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
So, tell us about how long you've been writing poetry.
Since I knew what it was, you know, I think that's just part of my gift, was just writing. Writing's always been very easy to me. As a kid, I won awards for essays and things like that. I mean, in all forms of writing, not just literature. But, you know, I loved writing essays in school and things like that, research, all of that. But it's just, for me, it's been a journey being able to write the way I did for the book. Because I always kind of was worried about who's looking. I think as a kid, my mom read my diary a couple times, and it kind of made me kind of gun-shy about writing in this way. And so writing for corporations or for businesses, things like that, that made it easy because someone is always looking over your shoulder and somebody is always looking at what you're doing. Even with essays, there's always someone judging what you're doing. But when it comes to that core creative expression, that's something that I had to do a lot of work to be able to express and do.
Yeah, well, a diary is pretty much one of the most personal things you can write, actually. And by the way, I want to stop right here and just say, if you're listening to us live tonight, you can call in. This is Wednesday, February the 7th, and 7 p.m. Eastern, and a little after 7. So if you're listening live and you want to talk to Candace Henry or me or just join the conversation, the number is 646-716-9922, 646-716-9922, and we will be happy to have your calls and talk. I think you'd be happy to talk with people, won't you, Candace, to call in?
I would love to.
All right. Well, we have actually have a call on the line here, and this is, I see, is Duffy from Adele, Georgia. And Duffy, welcome back to Madame Perry Salon. He's certainly a regular listener and contributor to Madame Perry Salon. Welcome, and I'd love to introduce you to Candace D. Henry.
Hello, Candace. This is Duffy.
Hey, Duffy.
Hi. I really very much admire your work. I was a poet for many years. I don't know if you ever stop being a poet once you are one. There have certainly been gaps. I've been doing other things. I was an actor for a long time. In fact, I was acting while I was a poet. But I'm primarily an actor, and I like to think that I'm creative and someone who does so many things, like you. You amaze me. I love your art, and your poetry is what I've read of it. I don't have your book yet, but I've read the three or four poems that I've been able to find online, and they're amazing. You are just you're one of the most soulful people, soulful, creative people I've ever seen, and it's really a privilege to get to speak with you.
Thank you so much.
I think your poem, Dying on My Timeline, is really a soul-wrenching poem to read. I think it's so important, and it expresses something that everyone would like to express but doesn't know how. And it's really something that you can read over and over again and get the get a really hurtful but inspiring message from it. I really love that poem. It's my favorite poem that I've read in a long time.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Yeah,
It was, I wrote that out of anger and frustration.
Yeah.
And, but not to bash anyone. I think it was just more to be a mirror for people to see, you know, what we're going through in the world. Like, this is the first time I think we've witnessed so many murders in our face, and I mean, like, with our phone, with our computer, real murders, not just on the television, not something that's being acted out. And then also the reason for the murders, and then, you know, the perspective of, well, these, some of them come through the timeline, but some of these things, these are just the ones that are filmed. There are also others that happen that are never filmed. And they don't get the attention. So I think the guy, Ronnie Shumpert, he died around the same time as Alton Sterling. But Ronnie Shumpert didn't have video to help
video,
him.
Video, right.
You know, it was a story where he was pulled over for, they just pulled him over. I can't remember why they pulled him over. But when they found him, the dogs had bitten off his testicles, and they found, like, pieces of his teeth where they shouldn't have been. And he didn't even die right away. It took him a long time to die, but they pretty much tortured him. And when I put the poem out and I did a hashtag for his name and Alton Sterling and then Philando Castile, because keep in mind, I wrote this before I found out about Philando Castile, and how I found out about Philando Castile was I sent the poem in an article I wrote about the poem to a friend of mine, and he said, well, check this out. And then that, I just added his name into it later. But with Ronnie Shumpert, once I shared the article and the poem online, one of his cousins reached out to me on Twitter and said, thank you. He said, because my cousin is not getting the recognition Alton Sterling is getting. And his was a lot more tragic. And that's the saddest part about it is technology is exposing so many things, but at the same time, how many people have been murdered for any reason at all?
Yes.
And they don't get the recognition
ignored.
They need.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You
so it made it to the paper, but not TV and not internet. Or not videos on the internet, should I say?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so many are ignored. So you don't get the dynamics of the numbers of people And it's every day, and you don't hear about them. And your poem brings out that point so blatantly. It's chilling. It's a very important poem. I think it should be in the Atlantic and in the New Yorker. And I think it should be spread around as much as possible. And it's in your book, right?
It is in my book.
I wish you good luck with
that.
I'm certainly going to spread the word for people to get it. And Like Me is a great poem too. And your art. I was reading your story about Stone Soup. Soul Soup. Do you consider yourself a Christian Scientist? I see you belong to the spiritual church in Atlanta. What's the you're a member of that church? What is the name of that church? Spiritual Center?
It's called the Spiritual Living Center, and I was a member of a Spiritual Living Center. And I was a volunteer. That's how that story I helped volunteer with marketing, but also I was taking classes there. So it's not Christian Science. It's I'm trying to think of the best way to describe it. It's really based on spirituality and thoughts, the power of thoughts. I think it's the basis of everything with the Spiritual Living Center, the personal power.
Yes, I see on their website that the roots of what they believe go back as far as, what was his name, Phineas Grimley or something, who inspired Mary Baker Eddy. And I see the roots of some of it in Christian Science, but of course it's evolved through the years, and now it seems like more of a wide-based spiritualist group, but they do... But there is a past life regression involved in it, which I think inspired that piece of art. Is that correct?
Yeah, what you'll find at places like Spiritual Living Center is a very broad spectrum of religion. They are very open, so you could be of any religion and still come there. What you'll find is people have different experiences spiritually. So when you have a class like the one I went to, people have various experiences and perspectives, and that's what makes the classes so great, is because you get to hear where other people are coming from. And so I was partnered with them. Just to give everybody background information, I was in a class, and we were asked about what we thought about death or what happens when we die. And so I was partnered with a lady who was just lovely, and we come from completely different backgrounds. She's had a different, totally different life experience than I have. And she told me that, she said, this is exactly what happens. And I said, well, what is it that how do you know? And she said, well, I had this experience, and I had this experience, and this is what I know. So when she was explaining her experience, I could see it so vividly in my mind. And I was just asking her, does it look like this? And do you see, is it this and is it that? And I'm telling her what I'm seeing in my head. And then she said, yes, it's exactly that. And I said, all right. And I went home, and I couldn't rest until I got it out, and so I painted it. And then I brought it to her. And that seems to be people's favorite book.
Yes, I think that's part of what an artist does. What do you feel, and how did you experience, and try to give a visual representation of that, which was masterful approach to art. That there's another thing I admire about you. I don't want to get in too much. About about the center, but did I'm sorry. Did you do they have they have services on Sunday or something? But are they actual worship services or meetings or?
Yeah, it will feel very much like a church, you know. And they always have a live band, and they have guest musicians every week. I have not been to the Spiritual Living Center in a couple of years, so don't quote me on these things.
Oh, okay.
But I'm still connected to. I've met some of lifelong friends there, so I'm still connected somewhat. I just don't attend services.
Yeah, you're a helper. that's what's important, I think.
Let me ask you another question about your
again,
book, if I could.
I'll throw it off to Jennifer.
Okay, sorry about that, Duffy, because I know it's so easy to have a if you'll please pardon the expression, Candace. I don't mean this in a creepy way. I hope it won't sound that way. But it's so easy, Duffy, to have a fan crush on Candace. As you first meet her, start getting to know her. So you'll have to bear with us, Candace, okay? Because, you know, I think I said something to you.
I'll calm down, I promise.
Okay. I think I said something to you, you know, after I heard your poetry, and then I followed up on you and started following you on Instagram and things and getting to learn about you. And the different talents and gifts that you have and that you use to help make people better and make the world better. I forget where it was we were talking about these things, and I told you that I had taken an acting class once where the teacher said that artists, actors, artists, creators, were the priest or are the priest of our culture.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I wasn't really sure what he meant. I thought he maybe sees like you try to see things in a bit of a involved but a bit of a detached way, to where you can look at things at all sides and actually see the depth of how it's painted with emotion. Maybe it's fear, love, whatever. And we try to reflect on that and do the best. Or I say we. I don't consider myself an artist, but the artist try to reflect on what you see going on in society, try to interpret it, discern it, and can often through your work, whether it's art, painting or poetry or literature or music, can often help us find a way to understand or unravel things that confuse us and help give us some light, some guidance, or feel like we're not alone. We don't have to be afraid. I feel like we're the only ones feeling this, thinking this. So when you write poetry or when you paint, do people tell you, you know, you wrote about me, you painted me, that's what I was feeling, Candace?
Yeah, all the time. I think that's one of my specialties, and I think it helped me a lot in the corporate world as well, is being able to draw the emotion out of things. I feel like sales are emotional, you know, so in the corporate realm, it's kind of like, well, this is what you have for sale, this is what the person is, and then you just kind of gravitate, well, what is going to make that person emotionally connected to the product? But then when it comes to the standard poetry, the literature world, it's like, all right, how am I feeling? Okay, well then, how can someone outside of me feel this? And sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's just straight up, this is just where I'm at. And I just kind of throw it out there and you know, people like it or they don't. But I think with Dying in My Timeline, for example, that was the time where I said, all right, how can I get people to see and to feel what this feels like from this side? Because there's about 50 different angles to this one situation. But from this angle that is mine, how can I get other people to see it and to feel it? And so the writing process is different than it is when I'm just completely just expressing myself.
I knew James Dickey, who was not my favorite poet or my favorite person at all, but he met with Robert Lowell, who is one of my favorite people and favorite poets, and he once said that writing poetry is finding out something that you didn't know that you knew. And even though you know what you're saying and you know that you're expressing yourself, when I was deeply into poetry, I would once in a while stumble on a line that says, it's like a eureka moment where I say, oh, I didn't know that. I didn't even know that about myself. What kind of things do you feel like you realize when you're writing, or when you're doing anything, your art, or I like the way that you have an artistic bent toward the business world, because most people don't have that at all, or mm-hmm. most people that are successful in business don't even have moments where there's absolutely no compassion at all, or any thought about anything except, will this sell? You know, how do I sell it? And I wondered how what is your creative process? How do you get started? And what goes through your mind as you realize what you're doing?
Sometimes it's beyond me, and like it's not a choice of mine. It's something that just has to happen.
Exactly.
So this is actually a story that I was going to tell on the show anyway, about how the book even came together. And so, as I said, it took me a while to be able to just write and write comfortably. And I was probably in my late 20s when I really would just write and write and write and write. I think I even had the first chapter of a novel that I wrote, and it was very, very sexual, very dark. And, you know, I actually gave it to my mom to read, and she loved it. And she says, where is chapter two? I love it, I love it, I love it. And I, for some reason, I think I just kind of paused on that. But I saved it, and I saved a bunch of poetry over the years. And I use a tool called Google Keep. And that's whenever I'm writing grocery lists or anything, I put it all in there. And it helps because when it's all time to, when it's time to put it all together, I can all find it all and you know, it's been good mm-hmm. to me. But anyway, so when I wrote that in my timeline, I decided, all right, I'm going to put a book together. I keep in mind that January, all that happened around like June, but that January of 2016, I said, I'm going to write a book by the end of the year. That's what's going to happen. But I didn't put a plan in place. I just said, this is what's going to happen. Well, anyway, once that dying in my timeline hit, and I got a lot of traction in the UK. So once all those people started loving it, I just kind of got really inspired. And I said, you know what, let me just put this together. And once I opened up like old Google Drive accounts and things like that, I found so much poetry. And I said, I have enough for a book. And so I put the book together. You know, I went, a lot of those poems in there, they're old, you know. There's only probably about three or four that are fresh. And so what I did was I put the book together. I got some great software. And I got a lot of help from my husband on putting it together. He's a graphic designer. So I got all that together, and then I was going to paint my own cover. I had the whole concept down, and then I said, all right, I'm going to draw it out and I'm going to paint it with oil pastels and then I'm going to scan it and turn it into a cover. And so what would happen is every time I sat down to paint or to draw out and plot out my concept, my hand would just start writing. And I just start writing. And, like, the words would just be in my head and over and over and over. And I would just, and it was the most painful stuff. And it just kept happening, kept happening. And I told them, I said, look, I can't. I just can't. I can't do this cover. And I got to do this poem. And he said, okay. So he picked it up, I mean, up from where I was, and he finished the concept and did it. But while that was happening, I was writing. And keep in mind, prior to me writing, having this situation where I'm writing this poem, I was so excited about this book. I was ready to go. I had the whole plan out, you know, the marketing plan. I was going to go like this, it was going to go like that. And let me tell you, that poem that I was writing, it took me like 3 days to write it because I was just crying the whole time and had to give myself.
I know how that is.
And so I just was like, man, you know. And then once I put it together, I just bawled, and I bawled and I bawled and I bawled. And what the poem was about is essentially tying together instances of sexual abuse and rape that I've had through my life. That I pretty much just, you know, said, oh, I'm fine. I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep going. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't. What happened was it's almost as if spirit was like, you know what? You got to address this and you got to get this out because you never know who you can help. But also you have to heal from it. And just pushing it to the side and staying busy and distracted doesn't heal anything. And so once I put that together, I put the book together and got everything just right. And it was just even more difficult because these are things that I've never said out loud. And so writing it and then putting it out there was even so scary for me and such an emotional thing. And honestly, the whole process threw me into a depression. So when I say it was a huge deal for me to even show up to read, it was such a big deal because all the plans that I had for promoting my book, it just went away because I was just, you know, it was almost like reliving and re-experiencing so many incidents all at one time, you know, things that you forget about or that you put to the side and having to experience that all at once and then work on healing from that. And it took me a while to get back in groove of my regular life. I don't even know what that is. Because my life is definitely falling. But so from there, I had people saying, oh man, you know, why aren't you doing this and why aren't you doing that? And, oh, here's some money for you to do this and do this. And I just couldn't. And I just was like, no, you know, I put it out there, it got published, all of that happened. But I just needed time to be able to breathe. Everything that happened and everything I was trying to heal from. And
oh my, I'm sure. Candace, I'm sorry, dear. I'm hoping that you know you are going to read for us tonight. And I also wanted to say, if you're listening live, still with us, and thank you so much. If you're listening live, you see why I was so excited about having Candace D. Henry here with us tonight on Madame Perry Salon. And if you want to talk with Candace, you want to call in, the number is 646-716-9922. And we'll be happy to have you call us because, Candace, we have someone else calling in right now. Welcome to Madame Perry Salon. Here with Candace Henry, how are you?
Hey, it's me, Sandra.
Hi, Sandy.
Hey.
Our Sandy. Hey, Sandra.
I've really been enjoying. Oh, great! I'm great. The show is wonderful. I love the paintings. They're so vibrant, and the poems that help people with trauma is a wonderful idea. I can't wait to read the book.
Oh yes,
everything but a smile.
Sandy is an artist as well. She's always been very good. She has studied and and she has an approach to art that's like nobody else I've ever known, and I've known her a long, long time. Welcome, Sandy.
Thank you. Yeah, these are beautiful pictures.
They are.
Oh, go ahead, Sandy.
I can't wait to hear Candace read some of her poetry.
I wanted to ask one question before you read, Candace. I used to read poetry. In fact, I was forced to read poetry when I was in school. And when I was in school in Alabama, I was ordered not to act. I could not stand on the stage and act while I was studying poetry. And I noticed that when I got up to read one of those poems, like you were talking about, that just makes you I think that's what makes you feel like this must be good somewhere, is when you get emotionally involved in a work like that. And I noticed that I had to act my way through it to keep from breaking up as I read. Have you ever had a problem with that?
Yeah.
This
poem.
Because you were saying
this
it took you 3 days and you couldn't.
Yeah, this is going to be the first time I'm reading this outside of my bedroom. And I've only not tried one time during that. And that's mainly because I had the right combination of wine and other stuff.
Yeah, okay.
The right balance. It's okay.
Well, if you're ready, tell us what you're going to read, then we are honored, and we will sit here and be quiet and listen.
Okay. Well, this poem is called The Information. I was staying up late when I got the information at a sleepover years before PlayStation. After watching reruns of Mr. Ed, turned the dial, sat back down, looked around, and got the information. My debriefing was everlasting. Children like me, different methods of teaching. I was never speaking, afraid to tell. So I passed on the information, but they already knew, told me what to do. A child's mind, now believing everybody was tuned into the station. I almost forgot. Years passed. My first teacher gave me more information. A child still, 7 years older, hormones on 10, consumed by this new dissertation. Wrestling with a scowl on my face, thoughts like scattering ants, unable to concentrate in actual school. My whole life forever changed from the first lesson. Confused from the start, going with the flow. Guilt for playing my part. Always told these lessons had to do with the heart. Older, sick of being taught and led. Fought for my own sexuality instead. Overexposing before they took my clothes off. Always winning the draw, even if I never wanted it at all. All grown, no more teachers. Staying protected from my peers, laughing at weak performances. Some not in my league and experience. They never got the childhood information. Had a change of heart, protecting it. Not so easy to part. Here comes another debriefing. You aren't in control. Don't play me. Don't play me with that good girl role. I know who you are. You fucked my homie in his car. Daggers inside me, licking my wounds. Apparently keeping my legs closed wasn't safe. My sexuality is someone's to take. I never wanted that lesson. The first one, the second one, any of them, or the rape. I thought it was mine to share when I felt like it. I did my time, owned it. No one can fuck with it. It's mine. Death consumed me. If anyone can take it, what's the point of having a will? A will to live, a will to give, a will to love, always ready to die. I reached out for help, never explained myself, thought no one would believe me. Because I was too free, because I owned my sexuality, because I had the information. I kept it to myself, stayed in my dorm, cared less about my hair, hygiene, and the norm. Equations collapsed and slithered off the paper, misguided essays, research out of touch, scattered ants joined by termites eating away at my life, unable to tell friend from foe. Money was the only thing that made sense to me until it didn't. Groups, medicine, and doctors looking at us, old me, new me, sick me, denying the informed me, denying it ever happened, calling it a fucked up situation, a horrible sexual experience, never using the word rape until it was 7 years too late. I blame my first teacher. Mixed emotions filled my mind's bleachers. Underneath them, a girl shivers by the cold haunting of her lessons, psychically screaming at her first teacher. I know who gave you the information. Someone taught you too. Pity and shame for all of you. Memory splash, tears fall, rocking back and forth, mourning the me before I knew, swearing to protect my child from the information. Always around those I trust. 5 years old. Work too far away. 2 to 3 hours of traffic, needing after school care, picked her up. And to my disgust, a student gave her the information. The internet was his tactic, followed up by reenactment. Groups even, after school care, no one caring, no one watching. The information changed her brain, stole her memories prior, locked herself away. She can't remember the good times, good people, or information received before her debriefing. In counseling, I thought she was faking, yelling for her to wake up, wanting to fix it, scrub her soul clean, being reminded that she is a person and not a machine. I remember all the fun times we had, her sister, a constant reminder, a new life, a new reflection of what she used to be, confident and so sure. Nothing could stop her, always wanting to learn and explore. Since then, insecure, unsure, second-guessing, a shell of what she was before. I fought to be what I am today, a beacon of light with no qualms to slay anyone or anything who disrupts our way. Conquering without blood, more than existing beyond the pain and emptiness, resisting the ease of being anything less, high above the thoughts and expectations of others, continuously discovering and being my true authentic self. I work with her every day to lift her up so that she may transcend negative ideas, doubts, and inconsistencies in the love of herself, hoping she never knows what it's like to want to end her life. Ever watching. Always believing, wondering, if memories have crept in, or are they lurking? I am. I want to be there when she wakes from the forgetful slumber her mind created to keep her safe, just to console her, guide her, throw her down, throw down my coat over puddles of shame, teaching the curriculum to avoid the messes I've made, sharing my mistakes, lessons from the side effects of the information I've received. If I was given this information to one day save a life, especially the lives I created, so be it. And that's the information.
That's incredible.
Wow. That's great.
Wow. Yeah, that's
great.
This is when I wish I had a commercial to go to.
I think I'll stay for messaging.
Yeah. And Candace, this is autobiographical?
Yes.
It's confessional.
Is this your truth?
Yes.
Go ahead, Sandy.
I'm sure a lot of people can relate to it because it's very powerful.
Mm-hmm. Because I was thinking when, and the part we're talking about your child to rescue her true authentic self, putting a coat over puddles of shame. And, you know, I'm thinking about how sometimes people may seem to have the same experiences and for so many different variables and reasons, their lives go different ways because of it or in spite of it. Like Truman Capote said when he interviewed the guys for the book, the murders for his book in Cold Blood. And he told somebody, it's like we grew up in the same house, but we left through separate doors. You know,
mm-hmm.
because that's how how I felt in a lot of situations in my life. Like, it's like, okay, we went through, I'll see things about somebody that sometimes I think, you know, it's like we were raised, we did the same thing. I had the same rage, but I've somehow managed to take a different door out of it. But I think, how could, when somebody goes through so much, the betrayal, pain, betrayal, and rape, prejudice, you know, abuse, physical and emotional abuse, psychic abuse, and then come later in life to put so much energy and effort into being everything you can be and coaching and helping other people through expression. I don't know if that's come through will of you, just personal will and strength, or do you just will yourself to do it?
I like to say that it's two things. One is just I just feel like I need to express and accomplish, you know, and not in the traditional sense. And I never felt like the traditional pillars of success were what I wanted, you know, or what I really wanted to pursue. But on the other hand, it's also, I feel like I'm very much spiritually led. So just like how this poem got written, there's other things that happen in my life that it just, it feels like I'm pulled toward them. I'm pulled to be in certain places. I'm pulled to go to certain things. And when I look and I pay attention, I can trace back single incidents that were the catalyst for things that are just so amazing. And then I can look back and say, wow, I really was kind of led in this direction. And this is beyond me. This is a very spiritual situation. Like how I even have expanded on my spiritual abilities and my work, my healing work. I can trace mm-hmm. that back to one specific day, one specific person. And that person just realized that they were the catalyst for all that recently. And so that's what I find so amazing about life, is that if you just stop and pay attention, you'll see that you're not doing it alone. There are other forces at work to guide you in the direction that you're going if you allow it. Whenever we fight against these things, that's when bad things happen. Or not, mm-hmm. I can't even sit here and say bad things, questionable things happen. But even then, when those things happen, like you can look bad at the moment, but then when you look at it from a further distance, then you can say, wow, this happened because of this, this, this. Oh, I'm so glad this thing happened to me because of this, 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 and this. And so there's an image that I put on Instagram recently that said that people who are sent to Earth to be healers have usually experienced a great deal of abuse and trauma and horrific things in their life, because how can you help somebody when you don't have the experience of coming out of it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm,
yes,
yes.
Yes.
Okay, that
and,
makes sense. Yeah.
And Jennifer and Candace, you touched on this too, and it's in what you just said. You can't will yourself to write a poem. It tells you that it needs to be written. The poem itself tells you. It's like going down a being led down a dark alley uncontrollably. You're being pulled into a dark alley, and you're having to bring light into it. And it tells you, and it takes you places that you don't know at first that's where you're going. And then you go back and you say, that's where I found this. That's who let me down here. That's how I got here. And if you don't approach it that way, you're forcing yourself, and you can't force poetry. And I don't know if you've had any formal training in poetry. Nobody has to be a poet. But I was wondering if you had attended any workshops or if you studied poetry in school or if you had any favorite poets or what's your experience there?
I didn't do anything beyond your standard English class, you know, as far as training. My favorite poet my favorite poem is Sylvester's Dying Bed by Langston Hughes. It's a beautiful poem about death, about a man dying, and when he's on his deathbed, he's got all the beautiful women that loved him around him. And that's always been my favorite poem since I was in middle school. I don't even know. Now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, why was that my favorite poem in middle school? But I just love the way it's written. It's written in a way that people spoke at that time. It's not written in your standard English. It has a lot of slang in it, you know, of that time period. And so it's just rich with emotion and love. And it's just, this man is surrounded by love. You know, it didn't matter what was going on with the women, that nobody ever talks about that in the poem. But you recognize that he is surrounded by love.
Beautiful.
Okay, now I've got to read that poem. I'm going to be looking that up next. Again, one last time, if we've only got about 8 minutes left with Candace D. Henry here, Madame Perry Salon, and I am so glad to have Sandy and Duffy in here joining us too in the conversation. We've got a few minutes left, Candace, and I would like to ask you about, you got 7 minutes left to call us, the number 646-716-9922. Could we, and remember the book is Everything But a Smile, and I'm also going to have information on how to find all of Candace D. Henry's social media on Madame Perry Salon's Facebook page, and I'll share it on Twitter and Instagram and everywhere so that you can find her. But one thing, could I ask you about something else? It's a little different direction since we're short on time, but tell me, what is Cloud 9.5?
Oh, Cloud 9.5. It's my metaphysical company. It's where I do my healing work, and I make my healing products. So I do readings with people. So if anyone wanted me to read you, and I don't like to consider it, when I say readings, like tarot readings, but I'm not giving people lottery numbers. It's more of a healing situation. So we really get. We get down to the core soul of what's going on. And so that's one of the things that we do at Cloud 9.5. I have a retreat coming up in May 20th through the 26th in Portland, Jamaica. And it's called Ready for Love. It's a love retreat. Just about self-love and, you know, letting go of past and kind of manifesting what it is you want out of love. But I also make custom incenses. I've always been into herbs and things like that. I grew up in a household that was very much about natural healing. And, you know, we always had reference books and herbs around the house. So it's just something I've always been into, and I'm very drawn to plants. And so I make incenses based on intention. So if I have... the first one I made was called Ready for Love. And so I got herbs together that represent the positive things about love. And then it smells amazing, but I didn't make it for the smell. I made it for the intention. And it's really a meditation incense, that's what I call it. So when you're meditating, it's something that you want to burn while you're meditating on your thoughts and your desires for love. And I have another one called Currency, which is pretty much does the same thing, but from the money perspective.
Go ahead, Sandy.
Oh, I'm sure they smell wonderful.
Thanks.
Mm. Well, I know I want to find out soon. So also, if you go to CandiceDHenry.com, you can find out how you could book her as a speaker. She is, and I can tell you this, highly sought after as a speaker, and that's what I wanted to get to as well with 9.5, was that and the workshops that you lead in entrepreneurship. And tell us a little bit more about the Ready for Love trip to Jamaica, or Ready for Love trip. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, it's the Ready for Love trip. So it's May 20th through the 26th, and it's in Portland, Jamaica. And Portland, Jamaica is not like any other part of Jamaica. Mainly because it's not what you see on TV at all. It's a very natural place. So if you like ecotourism, if you like water, this is where you should be. So it's got waterfalls, it's got rivers, and it's got plenty of beaches, and it's a very natural place. It's not commercialized like other places. And so, and there's a rainforest here. So it's a beautiful, beautiful place. And so the point of it was people have always come to me for their love concerns or advice, like since I was a kid. And, there's patterns that I've just noticed over the years, and a lot of those patterns, they just don't change. It doesn't matter, like, male to female, what demographic, age, a lot of these things are just kind of the same. And so what we're doing here is we are working on facing what you feel love is, your past influences of love, and that could be previous relationships or your own childhood. Getting down to the bottom of that and then cutting those cords if necessary. Next would be really kind of drilling down to what it is you really, really, really want. You know, not what society thinks you should have, but what do you really want out of a partner? And then we work on manifesting that. And then from there we talk about intuition, intuitive loving, like, you know, things that can help you use your intuition in your love life to make it a better love life for you. And so every day during this retreat, we touch water. We're at a waterfall, we're at a beach, we're at the river rafting. Not rafting as in, like, you know, whitewater rafting, like your sport. This is just like a laid-back rafting, like a bamboo raft that you just kind of laid back on, just checking out the scenery. You know, the rainforest is just all around you, and the beautiful part about it is there's no snakes, there's no big cats or no monkeys, so it's not anything to be worried about if you think rainforest. So it's a beautiful experience. It's just full of love, and it's going to be a great, great time.
What do you think of that, Sandy? No, it sounds heavenly to me.
Oh, we have art involved and writing involved in this retreat as well. So it's going to be extra yummy because you're going to be able to really get into your creativity. You know, it's always about creativity.
Do you have a web page or something with all this information about the retreat or the event?
Yeah, I do. Cloud9, so it's CLOUD, the number 9, POINT, the number 5.com, and that's the website, cloud9.5.com, and then you'll see on the menu there's something that says retreats, and you just right underneath that it says Ready for Love Retreat, and that'll just take you through the whole process, and the itinerary is there, like what we're going to be doing every day. So it's a great, great, great time.
Wow, it sounds great. Really fun.
I know. I've never been to Jamaica at all anyway, so this sounds delish. Candace, I'm so sorry we're out of time. I don't know about you, but to me this seems to have just flown by.
Yes.
But it's just been an absolute pleasure to have you here. I am so grateful, and I put out a message thanking Colin Kelly and Susan Vagno for creating the event where I got to actually hear you in person and meet you, and I'm just so thankful that you've been so generous with your time and your story and your art with us tonight. Thank you so very much for being here. And Sandy and Duffy, thank you for joining us. And everyone listening, go to, I'll have all of Candace's information so you can find her. And you'll be a fan for life like all of us here are, right, guys?
Thank you.
That's right. And let me say quickly that this is the first time on the show that someone has brought us all into a moment of stunned silence. After you read that poem, there was this moment of wonder that just that never happens. Never happens like that on the show. And thank you so much for being here.
Well, I know, and I unmuted mics, and you still didn't hear us after I unmuted our microphones. But anyway, Candace, you're an absolute joy and treasure to us all, and thank you so very much. And I love you all, and don't forget, everybody's got to swing, folks.
Vaccine.